Hello and welcome to the test process for Topic 10, The Age of Imperialism. This test was taken on April 2nd, 2006. Let's get started. Alright, let's start with question 1. It states, the belief in manifest destiny was most similar to later demands for... Best response to question 1, number 4, imperialistic expansion. Need to have understanding what manifest destiny is. Remember, that's expansion from the East Coast to the West Coast. Also consider some of the ramifications of that expansion, particularly on Native Americans. Alright, number 2 starts with a quote. In our infancy, we bordered upon the Atlantic only. Our youth carried our boundary to the Gulf of Mexico. Today, maturity sees us upon the Pacific. Whether they will it or not, Americans must now begin to look outward. This statement from the late 19th century best reflects a U.S. foreign policy of... best answer there, number 1, imperialism. What to stay away from? Option number 2, sectionalism. We looked at that when we did the pre-Civil War unit, when you had the North, South, and the West all had their own interests, economically, politically, and socially for the most part. Number 3 is a term, nativism. And that's usually a response to foreigners. You want your native values, your native ideals, and foreigners tend to mess with that, for lack of a better expression. And number 4, neutrality. Doesn't reflect neutrality. It looks like active involvement. Doesn't fit this question. Number 3, in the late 19th century... What happened? Okay, let's go fix it. Okay, question 3. Late in the 19th century, many Americans believed that the United States should establish colonial empires because... Best answer for that is number 3. American industries needed raw materials and markets. Number 4. Since 1823, which United States policy has limited foreign influence in the Western Hemisphere? Best answer for that is the Monroe Doctrine, which was 1823. Option number 1, the Eisenhower Doctrine, happens in the 1950s. We haven't even discussed that yet. Question number 2, imperialism, takes place in the late 19th century. And you had that hint, actually, in questions number 2 and question number 3. And popular sovereignty we first looked at when we looked at the Kansas-Nebraska Act in the 1850s. All right, question number 5. Which factor most influenced the U.S. decision to declare war against Spain in 1898? Best answer for this one is option number 2, the power of the press, and that's focusing specifically on yellow journalism, exaggerated claims and headlines that pointed the finger towards Spain for the humanitarian reasons, the mistreatment of the Cuban civilians, the explosion of the Maine, all that was placed squarely on Spain. Number 6, another yellow journalism question. It states, in 1898, William Randolph Hearst stated to a reporter, "You furnish the pictures, I'll furnish the war." This quotation illustrates best option number 3, the influence of press on public opinion. Okay, let's go to question 7, another yellow journalism question. Which 1890s headline is the best example of yellow journalism? Now, what you're going to be looking for here is hints from the other two questions, which suggest that these are exaggerated claims, headlines that are designed to catch one's attention. The headlines options include number 1, President McKinley supports child labor legislation. It's pretty boring and blah and factual. Number 2, McKinley asks Congress to annex Hawaii. Factual, actually exhibits checks and balances. 3, populists demand change in the gold standard. That's also factual. Or option number 4, Spanish atrocities butcher innocent civilians. Blah! That's yellow journalism. All right, that's an exaggerated claim. Okay, number 8, we have another yellow journalism question. It says, during the late 19th century, some United States newspapers printed exaggerated accounts of Spanish cruelty. These reports helped bring about the Spanish-American War, primarily by... Now, one thing I want to focus on, if you read question 8, then you flip back to question number 5. It says, which factor influenced the U.S. decision to declare war against Spain? That was question 5. Let me reread question 8. During the late 19th century, some United States newspapers printed exaggerated accounts of Spanish cruelty in Cuba. These reports help bring about the Spanish-American War primarily by. So it gives you the answer to 5 and the stem for question number 8. The best answer is option 1, arousing public opinion against Spain. Number 9. One major result of the Spanish-American War was that the United States, best answer there, obtained overseas colonies. We picked up Guam, Puerto Rico, and the Philippines. The acquisition of Alaska actually happened in 1867. Okay, number 10. In the late 19th century and early 20th century, United States intervention in Latin America was motivated mainly by the U.S. desire to. Now, what you want to keep in mind here is the proximity of Latin America to the United States. You're a couple hundred miles south of Florida, so they're right in our backyard. Why are we interested in that area? Best answer for that, number 3, ensure the safety of its growing investments in the area. We like to refer to this as dollar diplomacy, and that's when you use your economic power to exert influence. Okay, question number 11. U.S. interest in overseas expansion in the late 19th century was based mainly on the desire to. Late 19th century, once again, is the late 1900s. We're looking at overseas expansion. In your mind, I want you to put together that map of the United States and how we've expanded from the coast to coast. That's manifest destiny. We've picked up pieces of real estate via the Louisiana Purchase, the annexation of Texas, treaties with Spain and with Britain, and now we're looking beyond our borders. The first look happened with Alaska in 1867, and now, just like many other countries in Europe, we're looking for additional territories. The best answer for number 11 is number 2, attain raw materials and new markets. Now, if you remember from your homework assignment, Alfred T. Mahan wrote a book called The Influence of Sea Power, and one of the things that he promoted was the idea that it was necessary to have overseas markets and colonies, but also you had to have a navy to protect those overseas investments. All right. Number 1, you should cross right off the list. Achieve cultural diversity, just the opposite. It was the white man's burden to uplift and Christianize. We weren't promoting cultural diversity. Question 12, we have a cartoon. It's Teddy Roosevelt in the Caribbean Sea. He's got the big stick, and he looks like he's in control of a naval fleet that he's tugging along. Number 12 states, to carry out the foreign policy referred to in this cartoon, President Theodore Roosevelt added a corollary to. Now, we spoke in class about the Roosevelt corollary. The corollary is an addition. He added to, best answer, number 1, the Monroe Doctrine. He expanded U.S. Commercial interest in the region. And he also said we have a right to interfere in Latin American affairs. We became an international police power. Option number 2 said the open door policy. That actually dealt with China in 1899. We're in the Caribbean Sea. That should have been one of your hints. Question 13. The chief reason the United States built the Panama Canal was to... Best answer, reduce travel time for commercial and military shipping. This is a transportation innovation, much like what we looked at with the Transcontinental Railroad, ease of moving from point A to point B. The real need to build the Panama Canal came to the surface, so to speak, in 1898, when the USS Oregon took almost 2 months to get from San Francisco to Havana Harbor. It would have taken a third of that time if the Panama Canal was in place. Question 14. During the late 19th and early 20th centuries, the United States policy towards Latin America was most strongly characterized by, best answer for that, intervention into paternalism. Paternalism means you're governing kind of like in a fatherly way. Intervention, we were very active and involved in Latin American affairs during the late 19th and early 20th century. Okay, question 14. Wait a second. That was question 14. My bad. Let's go on to question 15. 15, 16, and 17 all deal with speakers. The situation is focusing on the Philippines. Now, 17, I told you, was a wash because I inadvertently pasted speaker D and speaker E. They're the same ones. All right. Question 15 says, each statement made by the speaker could be used to justify. The options are imperialism, protectionism, free trade, and anti-imperialism. Well, each of these statements in one way, shape, or form reflects imperialism. Let me read them to you. Speaker A, these poor, uncivilized, unchristian people need our assistance. If they are to be uplifted from their ignorance to a point least approaching our level of civilization accomplishment, the Philippines must be ours. All right, there's your white man's burden. Speaker B, these islands would certainly make an excellent coaling station for our great naval fleet, which is growing each year, as Congress approves additional funds for the construction of new ships. Speaker C, the shipping interests really find the Philippines to be an excellent trading center. Furthermore, they could be used to develop our commerce in China and Japan. We can use these islands as stopovers and storage points for our merchant fleets. There's your shipping, your trade, and your storage. And remember, the Philippines were a gateway to China and their 500,000 customers. Speaker D, were our economic rivals to obtain the Philippines, it would be a commercial disaster for our nation. We entered the race late, but we must not fall far behind now. That speaker really promotes the idea of that open-door policy. Let's get our foot in that region so we can compete with our economic rivals. All right, 16, you can answer using the four speakers. It says, which speaker presents a strategic reason for taking over the Philippines? Best answer there. Speaker C, he talks about shipping interests, trading centers, and storage points for our merchant fleets. 18, once again, we get a cartoon. You got a very svelte-looking Uncle Sam standing in the middle of China getting carved up by European powers. It says, which goal of the United States foreign policy is pictured in the cartoon? Best answer there is number 4, increasing opportunities for the United States to trade in China. What's that, Jack? Okay, moving on to question number 19. The purpose of the open door policy was to, keeping in mind the open door policy on that timeline in your mind takes us to 1899. There are pretty much no hints on the test that would lead you to that. You just have to know it. Best response for number 19 is question 3, improve trading opportunities in China for U.S. business. If you look at question 18, they're asking you about the open door policy. There's a hint in question 18. And if you got that answer right, option 4, increasing opportunities, the key word in both of those correct responses is the word trading opportunities, increasing opportunities, improving opportunities. There's a theme there. And finally, let's wrap this up. Question 20. As a result of the establishment of the Monroe Doctrine in 1823, the United States was able to, best answer, expand its influence in the Western Hemisphere. All right.
Can I say whatever I want? I won't yell.
All right, say whatever you want. Go ahead.
Thanks, dude.